Blog Talk Radio.
County, right here in Union City. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct. And as always, you know who I am, the Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here this evening, the 21st of June, the year 2018. And as the state budget continues to dominate the headlines, we'll bring you the latest this evening. And once again, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever you are here throughout the Garden State and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. You can always write to the show's inbox, ladies and gentlemen, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me directly on Instagram, @your_favorite_Fernando. Some healthy memes, humor, a little bit of everything on my Instagram, so I think you'll definitely enjoy it. Also, don't forget to follow me on Twitter. That's greatly appreciated, folks, @FernandoUribe Jr. Brand new followers every day, so I appreciate the support there from really people all over the state of New Jersey, along both sides of the political aisle, and just it's refreshing to see that. And I appreciate all the new followers and, of course, the likes and all the content on my Twitter, again, @FernandoUribe Jr. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Of course, take a minute and like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you this evening. Don't be shy. And call me toll-free this evening, again, 818-572-8032. Once again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Folks, again, don't forget to take a moment if you haven't done so already. Go to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Once you go on the main site, click to subscribe absolutely for free, folks, for the morning intelligence briefing. It'll get delivered right to your inbox each and every morning. You'll have up-to-the-minute news about what's going on in New Jersey. Of course, the budget crisis right now, as we're 9 days away from a potential state shutdown again. In Trenton. So Insider NJ gives you the scoops about what's going on with the budget, what the legislature is doing, as opposed to what Governor Murphy's thinking about. And again, they give you all that insight absolutely free, again, each and every day with the morning intelligence briefing. So don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Again, www.insidernj.com. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff. Taxes continue to drive us crazy, and that is the subject of tonight's First Shot. Well, folks, again, with 9 days to go in the current budget crisis in Trenton, the legislature certainly is at odds with Governor Murphy. Both sides have a fundamentally very different perspective about how they see the budget and what is supposed to be going on, I think, as under the state law, it has to be passed by June 30th. Otherwise, state services and state government will shut down on July the 1st. And it's interesting to me because as you know, I've been looking at sort of like the news cycle, I guess, and also of course, you know, looking at Insider NG first because they've been getting scoops better than anybody lately. But you know, I do my homework. I look around at you know NG.com, the Star Ledger, you know, other reputable sources in the state. And it's interesting to me because you know we're looking at the fact that as of 5 o'clock today, no deal has been reached on the budget, and we know that State Senate President Steve Sweeney out of Gloucester County in the 3rd Legislative District has you know really sort of dug his heels into the sand as it pertains to sort of not just you know giving Governor Murphy sort of like a blank check to be able to, you know, generate revenues and raising certain taxes for certain programs that he wants. So let's be fair. We dissected this on our program for weeks on end about what's going on with the governor's sort of agenda and what he's looking to do, whether it's establishing free community college for residents in New Jersey, whether or not it is to provide driver's licenses for illegal immigrants, whether it is, you know, creating a legal fund in Trenton to provide legal representation for illegal immigrants. So these are all programs he ran on last summer. And, of course, I think it mobilized a very progressive, you know, wing of the Democratic Party in New Jersey. And listen, let's be fair. I mean, he wasn't running against a very good candidate at all in Kim Godano. And nothing personal against Kim. I know Kim personally. She's a nice woman. Stand-up lady, did the best that she could under the circumstances as lieutenant governor. Of course, running on a campaign that, you know, quite honestly was easy for Governor Murphy because Chris Christie was so dislikable. And, you know, again, I think we had less than half of registered voters come out last November to, you know, send Phil Murphy to the governor's office. So, you know, again, and what we're seeing now, I think, is sort of not necessarily a mandate, but folks, you know, the bottom line is that as we look at what's been going on across the state, you know, we've been seeing that, you know, and I've talked about this with previous guests, and it's the fact that, you know, not every Democrat is cut out the same cloth. And I know that the governor has very liberal policies that, again, not every Democrat is going to just sort of like blindly follow along with. I think we've seen that with, again, State Senate President Steve Sweeney. We've seen that the Speaker of the State Assembly, Mr. Craig Coughlin, also has his own mind about what type of budget he would like to see passed. I know as recently as 2 hours ago, I know Insider NJ was reporting that the Speaker wants to forge ahead tonight with a budget vote. I know that a few in the caucus have resisted, but from what I'm seeing right now, you know, Speaker Coughlin is looking to produce a budget along with State Senate President Steve Sweeney and trying to hopefully have that be something that the governor will be amenable to. Now, listen, I think with 9 days to go, we're going to be seeing perhaps the sort of the classical political game of chicken that we've become used to seeing when it comes to budget battles and budget discussions in Trenton. To me, frankly, with 9 days to go, I don't understand what takes this long to sort of get it done. It's sort of, you know, if you know the budget has to be passed by June 30th, why, you know, why do discussions and why do conversations and why do these late meetings start heating up like with 10 days to go or 2 weeks to go? I mean, this is something I think that, you know, right before Memorial Day weekend or right after Memorial Day weekend, it should have been addressed. And it's something that I'm sure that if the legislature sits down and buckles down, they can come to an agreement with something. Now, again, you know, the great thing about our form of government, of course, is having checks and balances. And certainly the governor is not going to get everything he wants. I know the governor is interested in a considerable increase in the millionaire's tax, for example. He's also looking to levy taxes on ride-sharing services, you know, ones that we have come to depend on quite frequently, especially now during the summer months. You know, we want to go down the shore, we want to go party because the weather's warm. You know, maybe we don't want to drive. You know, we want to party responsibly. So guess what? Instead of driving, we'll take an Uber or a Lyft, and it's a much more cost-effective alternative than, you know, God forbid you get stopped by the state police on the Turnpike or Parkway, or some of these overzealous and annoying police departments down the Jersey Shore, or even some of the local annoying police departments up here in Hudson County, for example. I won't say that about my police department here in Union City, because there are guys and gals that work hard here in Union City. Some other municipalities, I think the police departments aren't so great, but, you know, I'll keep that to myself. But the bottom line is that, you know, taxes on those ride-sharing services are going to be bothersome for New Jersey taxpayers. The reality of, you know, maybe taxing Airbnbs now or raising the sales tax, which was, to the best of my knowledge, a no-no. That was not going to get touched. Apparently, the governor feels that it's going to be necessary to do. And, you know, one of the things that I feel sometimes doesn't, you know, get addressed is that, you know, when we think about, you know, the way the budget is constructed. And folks, you know, listen, the word tax is an ugly word for anybody. We don't like hearing that word. We don't like hearing the fact that this exists. We don't like hearing, you know, the reality of, unfortunately, you know, that a tax has to be levied for some reason or another. And that's really annoying as far as I'm concerned. And I think sometimes, you know, we think about sort of like the impact of what taxes mean for us. And, you know, we've talked about this on the program with previous guests. We know that property taxes in New Jersey continue to be the highest in the country. And I know that in the previous administration, I know Governor Christie was very adamant about putting the cap on property taxes, which is probably one of the few things I can applaud Governor Christie for. There's a lot I can criticize him on, don't get me wrong, but certainly I can applaud him and the legislature for implementing that cap, that property cap, property tax cap, excuse me. You know, but, you know, one of the things that I think is maybe a misnomer, or people are under an incredible misconception, is about the relationship between property taxes and the legislature. Let me be very clear tonight, folks. The legislature does not levy property taxes. Okay, those are handled by the individual municipalities in New Jersey. Okay, which, again, those property taxes, again, they're handled by the municipalities, which derive much of their own budgets from taxing homeowners within their own borders, within the borders of their specific municipality. And it's something I think that, you know, again, the fact of the matter is that, and even State Senate President Steve Sweeney has gone on record saying this, that he fears that sort of like the nature of that relationship, just it escapes voters, it escapes taxpayers. Because to them, all they're going to remember is that their taxes went up or that their property taxes continue to go up. And that's a big problem. You know, New Jerseyans don't want to hear about the millionaire's tax. They don't hear the sales tax. They hear the word tax and people are just, they're tired. They're just exhausted of hearing the word tax, you know. And again, and to sort of combat that perception, you know, what, again, and very publicly, both the state senate president and the assembly speaker have discussed about pushing through a budget, which, again, the governor has gone on record saying he promises to veto, that relies on, let's say, on temporary increases of 2.5% and 4% as it pertains to the state's corporation business tax. And that pertains to, for example, for companies making more than $1 million and $25 million in gross annual income, you know. And that's something that, you know, again, I think that the state senate president and that the speaker of the assembly are trying to push through. I think that could be, in their eyes, they feel that's something that could be, you know, marginally helpful to what we're going through. And the governor has responded by saying, well, it just seems like they're kicking the can down the road. It's just, it's one of those tax hikes that fades out after 2 years. And I think that is what concerns the governor. On the flip side, again, you know, when we look at what the legislature, what many in the legislature are concerned about, is the reality that, you know, we're already heavily taxed enough as it is on a multitude of different amenities. I just mentioned to you right now, folks. And to me, you know, listen, and I've had this conversation about this with, you know, other guests on the show, whether it was State Senator Ronald Rice out of Essex County, or also State Senator Loretta Weinberg, who's also the Senate Majority Leader. out of Bergen County. I had her on recently. You know, even having Assemblyman Michael Carroll from Morris County. I mean, he was very adamant about, you know, how concerned he is with this climate of taxation in New Jersey. He really, really is. He's concerned. He is quite nervous about what this means. And with 9 days to go, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know about you, but it just seems like we've lived through this drama again. So for anybody that I know may be interested in going to the Jersey Shore, let's say around July 1st or 4th of July weekend, just do me a favor. Be careful. Make sure you have some alternate plans as well, because we don't know exactly how this is going to move forward. But it's a sad state of affairs, folks. It really is, because the amount of taxes we pay here in New Jersey, to even the thought of paying more, that just seems mind-boggling to me. But we'll find out. Again, it's 9 days to go. We'll see which side flinches first, you know, in Trenton. Again, as we know that it will be, you know, a very interesting 9 days remaining here in the Garden State. And that is the first shot. Folks, again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. Toll-free number to call in tonight. Our toll-free number brought to you by Insider NJ. And now at, let me just make sure I get it directly here, at 8:15 past the hour, let's welcome to the program for the very first time a friend of the program, I think. He's a fan of the show. I appreciate all of his tweets this week, and certainly all of the support for the program this week here. And now representing the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance, folks, I want to welcome to the program here tonight Mr. Cody McLaughlin, representing, again, the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. Cody, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Fernando. Thank you so much for having me on.
No, listen, the pleasure's all mine. I appreciate you taking the time to be a guest here. And I know that, well, first and foremost, I appreciate you reaching out to me and Insider NJ. I know you have been wanting to come on the show and really discuss the importance of what you do with the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance, and, of course, the importance overall of this nonprofit organization. Now, and folks, again, if you're not familiar with them, you know, when you have a chance after the show, check out njoutdooralliance.org. For those of you that are not aware, I'm just looking at my notes here for tonight, just to make all my listeners sort of a little more educated about the significance of this nonprofit. Their mission is, quote, preservation through conservation. And the mission of the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance is to serve as a grassroots coalition of outdoorsmen and outdoorswomen dedicated to the conservation of natural resources and environmental stewardship. And the organization has gone on to say that they will champion the intrinsic value of fishing, hunting, and trapping among opinion leaders, policymakers, and the public at large. Now, Cody, I have to say that is a very nicely worded mission statement by the NJOA. But for our listeners tonight, simplify a little bit for us here about what makes the NJOA so worthwhile as an organization.
Sure. So there are 1.2 million sportsmen in the state of New Jersey, as you might know. And really what we do is we advocate for those strong sporting traditions and the value that they have towards not only sound science and healthy ecosystems and a healthy environment, but also in the intrinsic value that they hold for, you know, the generations of people, you know, since the beginning of time who've really come together around a campfire and, you know, and camped with their family, or gone pheasant hunting, you know, on Thanksgiving with their uncles, or gone fishing with their granddad on the weekends. You know, we really advocate for those traditions so that those sportsmen can continue to have that strong relationship with the outdoors that they love, the wild places and the wild things that get them out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. And we champion that cause down in Trenton, with opinion makers or opinion leaders and policymakers by, you know, really educating them about healthy ecosystems, how the science is on our side, and why it's so important to have a strong outdoor tradition for the 1.2 million sportsmen in New Jersey.
Well, Cody, and folks, again, if you're just joining us now here on, it's 8:20 on the East Coast. It's my pleasure to have on the program here our trustee from the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance, Mr. Cody McLaughlin. Did I pronounce that correctly, Cody? Is it McLaughlin or McLaughlin?
Yes, you actually did. It's uncommon for people to get my name right on the first try, so thank you for that.
Well, Well, no, the reason is because I was always, you know, I mean, I'm a big political junkie, and I grew up watching the McLaughlin Group on NBC for years on Sunday morning. So,
the polling firm?
It was that political talk show on NBC on Sunday mornings. It was the McLaughlin Group with John McLaughlin, I believe, and other guests, you know, they had around. So it was like a roundtable sort of political show. So that's why as soon as I saw your name, I'm like, all right, most likely it's pronounced McLaughlin, so I want to make sure I don't mess it up tonight. You know, Cody, one of the things that stood out for me right now in your narrative is the fact that, you know, New Jersey is a very diverse state. And certainly, you know, the 1 million plus individuals that you mentioned, the outdoorsmen and outdoors women, certainly is, you know, a very important population in New Jersey. It's a population that takes with a lot of pride their ability to hunt, to fish, trapping exercises and practices. But as we all know that, you know, a lot of New Jersey is very urban as well. So for example, up here where, you know, I mean, I see you're calling from a 609 number. I'm assuming maybe you're somewhere in Central Jersey. You know, I'm up here in Hudson County. You know, I walk two blocks and I see the skyline. I'm in New York City. It's a very urban area. And for a lot of our listeners tonight, maybe tuning in, when they look at the NJOA, they might ask themselves, well, that's great that they're, you know, catering and tailoring their mission or their grassroots initiatives for, you know, this specific population of New Jerseyans. But why should this organization or why should the mission of what they're doing matter to urban residents? Because I know it's important, but I want you to hopefully be able to explain it to us tonight, because it's important that even urban residents understand the significance and the importance of this organization.
Sure. So, first of all, I'm an urban resident. I'm calling you from Trenton, New Jersey right now.
Oh, okay.
Lifelong Trentonian. Okay. Been here my whole life. So is my whole family. So, I mean, I think that the outdoors are for everyone, you know, and that's people say that that's a tagline, and I say it often, but I think the important thing to note is that, you know, like we had 77 kids out fishing in Trenton for the Youth Fishing Derby that the NJOA was proud to help co-sponsor and co-staff the Saturday before last. And we had those events actually in partnership with the Department of Environmental Protection all over the state. We're launching Hooked on Fishing, Not on Drugs programs, which are targeted towards at-risk youth and getting them outside and teaching them an outdoor skill and coping skills and other life skills while they get to enjoy the outdoors. We're doing a lot of work and outreach into urban communities because we understand that, you know, even if a kid doesn't grow up right on the edge of the woods, that the outdoors is for everyone. That's why we have, you know, we advocate strongly for things like wildlife management areas where we have some of the most dense wild places in the Northeast region, because we're advocating for those areas and we're getting the DEP to, you know, use those sportsman's licenses and the fishing license fees and the hunting license fees and all the tag fees that you see collected by the state every year towards creating sound habitat and opportunities for sportsmen to get outside and get outdoors. In addition, we also staff and we advocated for the Becoming an Outdoor Woman program. I mean, we take women down to Sedge Island and teach them all about waterfowl hunting every year. We usually do a couple of those. I think that there's one event coming up within the next 2 weeks. We do we're proud to do a lot of community outreach work and getting people outside as early and often as we can all across the state.
Well, I have to ask, Cody, because, you know, one of the things you just mentioned right now really stands out for me is, again, the importance of, you know, getting New Jerseyans interested, getting them involved with, you know, within the ecosystem, and to, again, appreciate the activities that the outdoors brings us. And as you mentioned just right now, that, you know, just because you live in an urban area doesn't mean that you're not privy or don't have the advantages of trying to appreciate the outdoors, which New Jersey has so much real estate about, you know, concerning it. So it becomes a very incredible tool for New Jerseyans. Something that stood out for me, I know when you reached out to us to come on the show, and something I know that you've been, you know, a big sort of vocal champion about, and certainly something that you've been wanting to really bring light to, is that you know, here in New Jersey, you know, we hear, you know, every few months or certain seasons, the sort of the issues with bears in specific municipalities and counties. And we know that the that bear hunts have come under some controversy. I know some animal rights organizations in New Jersey, or even, you know, nationally, have looked at New Jersey and said that, you know, they're certainly not, you know, very fond of the bear hunts that take place every year in New Jersey. You know, for listeners tonight that are tuning in, and I know you have a very strong opinion about it, you know, what sort of awareness do you want to bring to sort of the concept and the topic of bear hunts, because it continues to really generate controversy in New Jersey, right, Cody?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, the bear hunt is a unique and kind of lightning rod issue where people get really polarized about it. And listen, I can understand why people think, you know, in a linear sense that if you're killing a bear, it's tough to talk about how good that is for the ecosystem, for the bear population in the state, for the communities in the state. But there's a couple of facts, and the science really backs up the sportsman on this. So I think it's important to note a couple of things, right? Number one, there's two mammals that we have in New Jersey, the densest population of in the whole country, okay? That's humans and bears. And it may not seem like it when we're hanging out in Trenton or up in, you know, Bergenfield or any other, like, you know, like downtown Newark or any other urban center. But, you know, it's important to note that there are huge swaths of the state that are very much rural and or suburban. You know, there was a bear spotted just today in Princeton that was running through people's backyards and stuff. And, you know, it's not every single one of those bears is going to be a nuisance or problem bear, but I think it is important to note that the stronger the population is, the more that they the more densely populated they become, and the more opportunities that there are going to be for negative interactions, like the Rutgers student that was mauled a couple of years ago, like people's cats and garbage cans, crop loss, destruction of property, you know, all those sweet corn fields that people love to drive by and stop on the side of the road and grab a couple ears of corn when they're going down to burgers and dogs with their family on a Sunday. That
sure.
You know, bears can destroy and decimate those important crops for New Jersey farmers. You know, I think it's important to note that that we have the our breeding bear population actually breeds at twice the rate of bears in other states. So most bears will birth a couple of cubs every year or two. In New Jersey, it's closer to four on average. That's a huge number, and that just means that, you know, while we already have the densest population of bears, the densest population of the bears in New Jersey are in the northwest corner of the state above 278, and in addition to that, they breed at twice the rate of other states. You know, it's just not a sustainable model, and we really need to start listening to the scientists down at the DEP who came up with a brilliant five-year management plan for black bears, and we really need to just follow that, work with the sportsmen as the state of New Jersey has done for over 100 years, and make sure that we're fighting for sound science and healthy ecosystems.
Well, Cody, now that you mentioned that about science and sort of, you know, sound ecosystems, you know, that's also come under some considerable scrutiny, not just I think at the state level in Trenton, but also at the national level, and we'll touch upon that in a moment. But something you mentioned about the bear hunt, which is interesting to me, because you know, we hear animal rights organizations come to New Jersey, whether it's PETA or other organizations that are advocating for bears and other animals that are hunted down or trapped, you know, et cetera. And, you know, they've been very vocal. They've invested a lot of money in sort of, you know, PSAs, for those listening tonight, you're not aware, you know, public service announcements, et cetera, about sort of, like, you know, whether we call it the lack of humanity or a lack of compassion or whatever adjective is being used. The bottom line is that we see that it still continues to be a very controversial topic here. And as you alluded to, that breeding rates for bears in New Jersey seems to sort of you know, supersede many other states, even nearby ones. You know, when you hear these sort of, you know, this rhetoric from, and I don't want to use the other side because, I mean, I don't want to sort of pit people against each other. But when you hear this rhetoric, let's say from organizations that denounce hunting or, you know, trapping, when you come into contact with them, either in Trenton, you know, as either, you know, lobbying or meeting with elected officials, what's been sort of a consistent rebuttal that you have when it comes to dealing with these individuals that, quite frankly, look at these bear hunts or and trapping practices as just cold and heartless? Because I'm sure you've heard those adjectives, right? So when you hear them,
oh, absolutely.
What tends to be the rebuttal for you?
No shortage of hate mail. I've written op-eds on the subject and others related to trapping and the like in the past. Look, the number one thing that that you'll hear me say when I'm confronted with somebody who, you know, doesn't necessarily agree is, look, I understand where you're coming from and I understand why you might feel that way. But the most important thing that we have to look at is the science. And the science dictates that these tactics work. The North American model of wildlife conservation has been a world leader and a world model for you know, centuries. I mean, if you look at, you know, the early 1900s, there were only 300,000 turkeys left in the wild, and now there's over 6 million, you know. Deer, the nuisance population that everybody loves to talk about, white-tailed deer were almost wiped out in the late 1800s, early 1900s, until instituting properly managed and science-based hunting and conservation efforts. You know, I think that just the sportsman's record speaks for itself. And you know, whether it's the American shad or saltwater species like the striped bass, or, you know, the fluke, or bears, wild turkeys, deer, foxes, both gray and red. You know, we've done a lot of good for the environment, and that's just math. You know, so it's kind of an irrefutable fact. And, you know, people, I just point people towards the great relationship that sportsmen have always enjoyed with the scientists that work at the DEP, that the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service, at the Division of Fish and Wildlife here in New Jersey, which is a national model. I can't say enough good things about the great work that Larry Harity has done. And we're really excited at the NJOA that Catherine McCabe is coming in and supporting the scientists at the Division of Fish and Wildlife. So, you know, we're expecting a lot of good things, and we're hoping for a continued really strong relationship with the division as we seek to promote healthy ecosystems and strong sporting traditions.
Speaking of strong sporting traditions, what's been your experience, Cody, with members of the legislature as it pertains to bills being introduced in Trenton? And listen, like anything else, we know that the – again, folks, if you're just joining us here now, it is 8:30 on the East Coast. Here on the program tonight, it's my pleasure to welcome again Mr. Cody McLaughlin, a trustee from the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. You can check out their work at their website, www.njoutdooralliance.org. Like anything else, Cody, we know that those that go to Trenton to lobby for causes and to be advocates and to go about it in a very structured, organized way, I mean, certainly you're not alone in that. What's been the feedback you've received from legislators in Trenton, both in the Assembly and in the State Senate, as it pertains to, you know, advocating for and really, you know, being very vocal about legislation that's going to help New Jersians? What have been some legislative victories you can sort of brag about tonight? And what are some hurdles that, again, that this community, the outdoors community, the, you know, your organization still faces, for example, in Trenton?
Sure. So I think that the number one thing that we'd like to brag about is that we get things done. We get things done for the sportsmen in the state. We get things done for the public in the state, whether that's, you know, advocating for the bear hunt in the first place, whether that's, you know, stopping the bad bills like bans on trapping, whether that's introducing the Hofnod bill, which actually instituted a program that was started by the Future Fishermen Foundation as
Cody. I'm sorry, Cody. I'm sorry to cut you off. Excuse me. I'm sorry. When you talk about bills about bans on trapping, for our listeners tonight, maybe they aren't aware exactly of what that entails. Could you just very briefly just sort of just explain that, because maybe our listeners tonight aren't very well versed about what an actual ban on trapping entails.
Sure. So the ban sounds just like it would, or just like it sounds. There's a legislator or a group that introduces a bill to, you know, try to kill regulated trapping in the state. And we educate legislators. We've got a great relationship with legislators on both sides of the aisle who really understand the importance of trapping and cutting down on things like or diseases like rabies, like mange, like distemper. And, you know, what we do is we go into committee, we go into the legislative offices, and we talk to the legislators about in both parties. You know, we're a nonpartisan entity, and we educate them about the science behind the issue, you know, and that's the same that we do with any issue as it pops up in Trenton. You know, we head down there, we talk to leaders in both parties, we educate them about why, you know, something like distemper has a negative impact on their community. As you can imagine, things like rabies, with the scares that we get, is usually a good thing to educate legislators about, and how a strong regulated trapping program can cut down on those diseases, which, you know, not only are a public safety danger, but they also decimate wildlife populations. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen an animal who's been suffering from mange or distemper, but, you know, mange spreads like wildfire. There was a fox just last year, a red fox in Ewing Township, just west of Trenton where I live, which, you know, like the newspapers made a joke out of it because nobody could figure out what the animal was. It ended up being a fox with mange, and it was so ravaged by the disease that, you know, it was unrecognizable as a red fox, which is probably one of the most easily identifiable wild animals in New Jersey. So, you know, I mean, things like that, when people talk about, you know, the humaneness of trapping, I would say that, you know, it is much less humane for an at capacity or over carrying capacity wildlife population to die slowly of disease and starvation than it is to you know, I mean, harvest and not waste those animals and that wildlife resource.
You know what, Cody, and I'm glad you explained that to me, because, and I think our listeners also, I think, are grateful as well, because it's important to sort of dissect an issue like this and to really get to the bare bones of, you know, what causes controversy for any topic. And as we all know, in New Jersey, there's plenty to complain about, you know, for anything. But especially in this specific topic, you know, I know tons of people that, you know, live in different counties. And, of course, you know, listen, living here in Hudson County, it's about as urban as it can get in New Jersey. You know, certainly, you know, parts of Essex County, I know Mercer, where you live in Trenton, you know, all the way down Camden or even Atlantic County. I mean, certainly many urban areas. But for a lot of us, you know, especially in today's political climate, we know that there's a very big emphasis on the humane treatment of animals and, you know, sort of a, I mean, I don't want to use the word infatuation, but there's a very real tangible appreciation that exists for a lot of New Jerseyans when it comes to looking at animals of all kinds and looking at the humane treatment and saying, you know, if the state, I'm just giving you a devil's advocate arguments, because I really would love to hear what you have to say about it. You know, many New Jerseyans can turn around and say, hey, I get it. There's a breeding problem. Bears are breeding at a higher rate now than they have in recent years. We're seeing breeding by foxes, by deer, whatever. You know, a large plethora of animals we can name. The bottom line is a lot of New Jerseyans might turn around and say, you know, Cody, no offense. You know, if Trenton and the state really wanted to go about this in a more humane manner, they could. But we're seeing these, you know, we're seeing these trappings or we're seeing these sort of hunts take place. And it's just wrong. These poor animals are hungry. These poor animals are, you know, they're being driven from their homes because of overdevelopment in New Jersey, and, you know, they're really not left with a lot of resources, and, you know, they're going into these municipalities, and it's not their fault. They're animals, and, you know, we need to have a little more compassion, and we need to have, you know, a warmer type of heart. And when you hear that rhetoric, Tony, I mean, again, and I'm not trying to dismiss people that are animal lovers, not at all. So, again, if anyone's listening tonight, please don't misrepresent what I'm saying. But when you've heard those talking points, and despite the fact that, you know, we're talking about sound science and you're talking about the necessity of, you know, from a hygienic perspective, from a public health perspective, it just seems that for a lot of New Jerseyans, it's not registering. They're just not processing those talking points. Is it now a lost cause in trying to sort of convey that to people in New Jersey?
Absolutely not. Nothing's ever a lost cause in politics, as you likely know.
True.
I think it's important to hammer them with the facts as early and often as possible, right? So when I hear people, you know, kind of talk about the same talking points that you just brought up, let's talk about a couple of them. You know, the ever-present argument that development is the real problem, and that's what's driving wildlife populations into suburban and highly populated areas. A couple things. Number one, absolutely agree with you. Development does, in fact, bring wildlife populations into highly populated human areas. Would you like to know why? Because of a couple of things. The nuisance wildlife that we deal with in New Jersey, black bears, foxes, raccoons, possums, deer, all thrive in suburban environments. And that is because of the environment that is created, the ecosystem that is created by the development. So a fox doesn't have to go hunting for field mice through a sorghum field or trying to pick off pheasants. I don't know if you've ever hunted pheasant or anything before, but it's a challenging endeavor. So a fox doesn't have to go picking through a sorghum field and get, you know, pricker bushes all over him or anything. Now he just has to dig into a trash can to get food, or he has to go pick up the cat food that people leave out for him because they think it's, you know. So I mean, people think that they're doing these animals a favor when they do things like that, but it's just not the case. That and the fact that, you know, like I said, when you look at how densely populated a wildlife population gets, once that starts to happen, you know, we see it with foxes all the time because they're a rabies vector species, or any of the rabies vector species, really. Raccoons are part of that problem too. So, you know, once we start seeing rabies take hold, it spreads like wildfire and decimates the population. You know, you talk to any old timer here in Mercer County who fishes, you know, places like Spring Lake along the river, along the Delaware River. Mercer County was a huge center for pheasants and ringtail pheasants in the state of New Jersey. Then a chicken disease swept through about 30, 40 years ago, decimated the population. That's why we stock pheasants on wildlife management areas in New Jersey. And what pays for those for stocking those birds and the rearing and the raising and the protection of those birds? The hunting license fees that hunters pay every year, you know, $40 for a pheasant stand, you know. So it's, I mean, at the end of the day, I think just the facts speak for themselves, and sportsmen, you know, do enjoy hunting. We love the sport that we pursue. You know, there's no other reason we get up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, before the break of dawn, to get ready and get out into the woods half an hour before sunrise. But I think it's also important to note that we put our money where our mouth is. You know, no other group, animal rights or otherwise, puts as much money into conservation of wildlife and wild things and wild places and wild animals as hunters, fishermen, and trappers do in the United States, not just New Jersey. So, you know, I mean, my dad used to say that money talks, and I really think that the amount of money that sportsmen spend pursuing these things and getting educated about the issues and fighting like the NJOA does for sound and healthy ecosystems is, you know, it speaks for itself. We're committed to this because we love the wildlife that we go out there to pursue. We love the wild places that we go out to do that in. You know, we love sitting on the lake at 5 o'clock in the morning, and nobody loves it more than us.
Well, first of all, let me tell you something, Cody. As a city boy, I'll tell you, I applaud you, man, because I'll tell you, at 5 in the morning, I like to be in bed, okay? You know, I applaud anyone who likes to hunt. I know it's a very enjoyable activity. I've met some hunters throughout the years, and certain people have told me it's very therapeutic. It has been something that's enjoyable. It's something that's, you know, that's really fun, even among family members, to go do. And certainly it is not without a marketplace, an industry of for men and women, and even young children. I know that families take their kids early on to you know, sort of introduce them to the significance of hunting and the benefits that it has. And, you know, listen, I've seen it. I've read about it tremendously online. And again, before having you on here tonight, I was looking at your website and looking at sort of the importance of really reinforcing those values of responsible hunting and gamesmanship and everything else. And something that caught my mind, I wanted to ask you about tonight, because I looked at, again, as I was looking at your website, I saw an op-ed here that was interesting about fox trapping. Now, you know, again, up here where I live in Hudson County, as I mentioned, it's as urban as it gets. We don't see a lot of foxes. Unfortunately, we see a lot of possums, which are annoying. Maybe some occasional raccoons at the county parks, but not a lot of foxes. And certainly, I know in different parts of the state, it's much more prevalent. But if you could just share with us kind of a little bit about the significance of that op-ed, because as I was reading it, and I looked at the title as it reads, "Why Fox Trapping is Critically Important." Could you just sort of just give our listeners a brief synopsis about why this is so critical?
Sure. So one thing I just want to touch on, just because you don't see a wild animal often does not mean that they're not there. Trust me on that. We can set up a couple game cameras at your house if you'd like, and you can really see what goes on once the lights go out, which I think is something that a lot more people should do, because, you know, it'll really educate them about the fact that, you know, just because you're out in your yard at noon doesn't mean that you've seen every animal that lives in your lives on your property.
So specifically about the
fox trapping issue. So the op-ed that you're referencing was actually one that I wrote for the Save Jersey blog. Matt Rooney's a very good friend of mine. Small plug for him. In Brigantine Beach, there was a at or near capacity, carrying capacity, and let me go off on a tangent here. Carrying capacity is just the amount of animals that that can sustain a certain ecosystem's food and other natural resources before negative effects start to happen to them, things like disease and starvation, et cetera. So, you know, you're seeing a very strong population in Brigantine Beach of red foxes. Been that way for over a decade. And, you know, naturally, you know, they begin to become a bit of a nuisance animal with regard to certain protected species. So one of their biggest sources of prey and sources of food in Brigantine Beach especially is the piping plover. The piping plover, along with a couple of other ground nesting beach birds, are critically endangered all along the East Coast. Now, part of that problem is, in fact, development, but, you know, you can't unring the bell on that stuff. And, you know, there's just really nothing we can do to walk back the time there. So we need to move forward. So in partnership with sportsmen in the state and in the area, both the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service and the New Jersey Division of Fish and Wildlife have been for over a decade. This comes up as an issue every year, actually. And you can look up the articles all the way back to the 90s in the New York Times about it. So, you know, they trap foxes, you know, a certain amount every year to keep the population at a sustainable and healthy level in order to promote a healthy and strong and hopefully soon, you know, fingers crossed, growing population of piping plovers and other ground nesting beach birds, which, again, and I can't stress this enough, are critically endangered along the East Coast. They're being decimated. Their numbers are declining in New Jersey every year, and you know, it would just be heartbreaking to let a bird that we could so easily help go extinct just because, you know, people just don't understand the science. So, you know, the issue at hand was that people had been noticing things like snares or like old pieces of snare sets in the sand dunes in legal trapping grounds that, you know, during the season. And they were unhappy about it. And look, like I've said a couple of times already, I totally understand where people come from when they say that they don't understand where sportsmen come from with regard to these issues. But again, it's just super important though to understand that things like this don't come out of a vacuum. You know, this isn't the deep-pocketed hunting industry coming in and lobbying for open season on foxes because we hate foxes. These are people who've pursued traditions for, you know, decades or even, you know, or even longer through their family, who are partnering with scientists at the federal level and the state level and the regional level to combat an issue and to execute a management plan that is designed to bring a species back from the brink of extinction to healthy and sustainable levels in New Jersey. And that's something that I think that pretty much every New Jerseyan can get behind.
You know what? That's a fair point. And I'm glad that the way you just outlined that for us to see, I think, has been thorough. And I think it's important for our listeners to really get a perspective, Cody, about how, you know, important, let's say, as you just alluded to, the fox trapping is. Because, for example, you know, being up in North Jersey or even Central Jersey, you know, the plight of residents in South Jersey sometimes go unnoticed or go disregarded. And we can't do that. You know, we have to look at these issues because they affect New Jerseyans overall. As you mentioned before, it's the most densely populated state, and they're just different regions of New Jersey that are affected differently within the ecosystem. And again, whether it's bear hunts or fox trapping, we know that different regions of the state require different types of attention. And I sort of wanted to get your thoughts on this because, again, while it's still very early in his administration, what has been the experience that the NJOA has had? Because, again, looking at the website, and folks, if you're just joining us here, it's 8:50 on the East Coast. It's my pleasure to have on the program here Mr. Cody McLaughlin, a trustee from the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. You can check out their very informative website by going to www.njoutdooralliance.org. Now, the NJOA, Cody, is a relatively new organization. I mean, I'm looking at its history here, and again, as I was doing my homework, it's not a very old organization. I mean, it's advocating for issues that, quite frankly, I'm sure have endured for many, many years. But within, let's say, the last two administrations, I mean, it's a little early now in the Murphy administration, but throughout the 8 years of Chris Christie, and even maybe before him, even with John Corzine, what's been your experience, or what's been the organization's experience in dealing with the governor's office in terms of bringing these issues to light and how important they are?
Sure. So a couple things. You know, I think we work just as much with the Fish and Wildlife Council, which is actually a national model. New Jersey has the strongest and most independent Fish and Wildlife Council in the country. Actually, they have some power that, you know, even the administration can't take away from them, even though they are actually first elected by both the New Jersey State Federation of Sportsmen's Clubs, which is an organization we're proud to partner with on a lot of issues, and the Agricultural Board. So, you know, in addition to educating Fish and Wildlife Counselors, of which, you know, we meet with often, we have, and I've mentioned this already, and I cannot stress this enough, an outstanding relationship with both the New Jersey Division of Fish and Wildlife and the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. You know, we put on fishing events with them. We sponsor a lot of their events. We work with them and provide volunteers and help gather volunteers for endangered species projects, wildlife restoration projects, habitat restoration projects, educating new and budding sportsmen and sportswomen, you know, putting on public outreach events. So, you know, we enjoy a great relationship with you know, especially the division. Once again, Larry Harity's best in the business, and we're enjoying a pretty good relationship with Catherine McCabe, the new DEP commissioner. She was just sworn in. Congratulations to that, Commissioner McCabe. So, you know, and she's come out and backed science, you know, and that's really the only thing we care about. We, you know, I mean, look, listen to me. If a sportsman in New Jersey believed that a hunt would imperil the survivability of a species, no sportsman in New Jersey would be in favor of that season. And that is simply because nobody wants the long-term continuance of the species more than the person who spends, you know, their time and their hard-earned money, you know, hunting them or fishing them. That's why we advocate so strongly on these issues, because this is a passion for us. You know, we love these wild places. We love these wild things. And, you know, rhetoric aside from animal rights groups, and I understand that some promises were made, you know, during the last election, but we really feel strongly that once the administration gets the science in their hand, the 5-year bear management plan that has been worked on, both federally and at the state level by some of the best ursine biologists in the country, once they get to see the science and they evaluate it, just like Catherine McCabe said in committee a couple of weeks ago, I think that there's really no other choice but to understand that you know, all of these decisions are based on sound wildlife management principles. And I think that Governor Murphy's going to come around to that hopefully soon here.
Well, hopefully. I mean, there's a lot on his plate, as well as there's a lot on the plate of the legislature, as
yeah.
We all know.
Let him get
with
nine first, and then we'll talk, you know. I'm happy
yeah,
to go,
exactly. Yeah,
go sit down with Governor Murphy and talk to him all about the issues anytime he wants.
No, listen, sure. And, again, with 9 days to go, I mean, it's crunch time here. We'll see what happens with the legislature. But I wanted to ask you, Cody, because I wanted to sort of maybe pick your brain a little bit here tonight, because I think that when it comes to discussing issues like this, I think that, you know, when it comes to the treatment, you know, the humane treatment of animals and, you know, the ethical treatment of animals, I mean, that comes under a lot of scrutiny and debate. And we know that there are plenty of nonprofit organizations out there that, you know, and listen, I like to be objective on this program, but I'm also very real and sort of very blunt, where, you know, sometimes people have, you know, their heart's in the right place, but man, their delivery sucks. And their execution sucks in the way that they try to convey and their message. And, you know, the first one that sort of comes to mind, because we know that they're very active in New Jersey as well as everywhere else. But, you know, for example, I sort of want to, you know, pick your brain tonight and get your thoughts about organizations such as PETA. And again, for those folks who are listening tonight, if you're not aware, PETA is short for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. It's perhaps one of the more famous animal rights groups in the country. I know they have a very strong presence here in New Jersey. When you hear some of the narratives that come out of, let's say, an organization like PETA and other ones as well, because, you know, again, I'm sure when you get home, I get tons of mail, Cody, because I donate to a lot of different sort of like worthwhile causes. You know, I donate to, you know, the Conservation Society here in New Jersey. I donate to for ducks. I donate to the World Wildlife Fund. I'm a big, you know, I donate to the Defenders of Wildlife. I mean, I'm someone that takes those organizations very seriously, and, you know, the National Wildlife Federation. And I always, you know, I feel good donating what I donate every year. And, you know, but when we think about organizations that are very, at times, inflammatory and even bombastic in their delivery, and again, the first one that comes to mind, again, this is not to smear them or to slander anybody, because I know people that work at PETA, but sometimes their execution can be downright just scary and just volatile. You know, in your experience, though, when working with animal rights groups or advocates, what have been some of the biggest divides that exist in conversations?
The divide comes when people are just unwilling to sit down and talk about the science or find a middle ground, right? So, you know, there's a reason why the NJOA has such a proud history of working with legislators and having a fantastic relationship, by the way, with legislators all across the aisle, because they know through our history, our reputation, and the way that we approach these issues, that we're going to come in to an office, we will sit down with anyone, and we will talk to them about the issue, we will educate them, we will bring up our side, we'll bring facts to the table, charts, graphs, whatever you like, all the evidence that we have to bring to bear on an issue, and that nothing that comes out of the NJOA as a policy point or bill or issue that we advocate comes without a thorough vetting process, lots of information. And, you know, I think it's really easy to get I think the other thing to keep in mind is that the NJOA is an all-volunteer organization. We're an organization that takes a lot of pride in the fact that we meet, you know, we're a meeting of the minds of people who are stakeholders and invested in sound wildlife outcomes in the state of New Jersey for sportsmen. And on the flip side of that, a lot of these like professionally run organizations are run by political operatives that take, you know, a paycheck. And so, you know, they look at the polling, they look at, you know, they look at the money that they're about to spend on an issue. And, you know, I think that drives a lot of the vicious rhetoric that you see from those organizations. But, you know, like, we're not fazed by that. We understand that that's how the game is played by some. We choose not to play that way. We choose to take the high road and educate the legislators whenever we can. And, you know, we've been wildly successful using that model, and we'll continue to use it.
Now, and great answer, Cody, by the way. Now, aside from sort of the outdoorsmen and the outdoorswomen sort of initiatives that I know that the NJOA advocates for, I know you've used this word repeatedly tonight. I sort of want to delve into it a little bit, the importance of a sound ecosystem. And if you could sort of share with our listeners tonight a little bit about, you know, sort of the policy initiatives that the NJOA is really, really pushing for as it pertains to the preservation of a strong ecosystem. Because, and again, you know, Cody, I don't like to get too ideological on this program. I have my beliefs, and I don't try to force them on anybody. But we know that when talking about the environment and talking about the ecosystem, you know, it's a very polarizing topic. It's a topic that generates a lot of reaction and emotion in individuals, you know, because we start talking about concepts that are still scrutinized, whether, you know, whether climate change is real or, you know, the preservation of certain resources, you know, what is the best way that government can go about, you know, pursuing natural resources for the citizenry. All those discussions come under the microscope. But so tonight, you know, as you've mentioned, you know, the importance of the sound ecosystem, what can you share with us tonight about what the NJOA is doing to contribute to a sound ecosystem?
Sure. So actually, we just had a big issue pop that we've been working on actually for I mean, some of the guys have been working on this for almost 10 years, even before the NJOA became an entity. The you know, great guys that I work with here have been working on this, and that's traps on the reefs in New Jersey. We actually just got a federal ruling on that. That's gonna take the traps off the reefs that, you know, I mean, are just terrible for the ecosystem down there near Point Pleasant, and we're, you know, we're proud to advocate for strong and healthy ecosystems that promote strong and healthy wildlife. So, you know, that's just the most recent example, but you know, I mean, in addition, we're advocating right now strongly against moving the bluefish quota from an 87-13% recreational commercial split to a more to, you know, bring it more commercial or more towards the commercial side. You know, we try to keep as much as the fishing quota towards the recreational side as possible, because, you know, we think that sportsmen have a much more vested interest in, you know, maintaining healthy populations. There's no profit motivation involved there. You know, these guys, these are just guys that want to go to the same spot every year and catch fish, you know. and they know that they're not going to do that if they're not promoting healthy and sustainable wildlife populations. You know, in addition to that, we think that the number one way that we're going to start making moves in the right direction with regard to the environment is through education. That's why we advocate for things like Hooked on Fishing, Not on Drugs, which, you know, we just started one. Actually, I partnered with the Mercer County Park Commission. I got to give a good shout out to the guys there. The entire Park Commission staff has been wonderful in helping us implement that program, which is a, there's a statewide goal to have one of those programs in all 21 counties in New Jersey, which we're hoping to complete within the next 2 to 3 years. In addition to that, you know, well, as a part of that program, we educate kids about water resources and how the watershed affects, you know, the entire ecosystem. In addition to the, that program, we have quail in the classroom and trout in the classroom, both things that, that the NJOA has partially funded in the past and advocated for. And we educate kids about those wildlife resources, and we actually bring quail and or trout into the classroom for the kids to raise and then release. So, you know, a lot of good things. We center, though, on education and through, you know, taking the principles that we see that promote healthy ecosystems, and then we fight like hell for them.
You know what? That's well said. And again, you know, Cody, I commend you for really being thorough this evening, because I think it's important for our listeners tonight to really get a sense about this topic that doesn't really get discussed, you know, a whole much, whether it's on social media or even sort of the traditional news cycle. And it's important to make our residents aware about these issues that are very important.
Absolutely.
I
couldn't agree more.
Yeah, something that caught my eye from the website, Cody, and again, it was a petition here, I think, that was, and again, it's important that maybe you can help us understand this tonight, the importance of a longer sea bass season. And, you know, for a lot of New Jerseyans, they may, A, they may not know what that is, B, they don't know from what point of the year to what point of the year it exists, and C, what is the necessity of extending the sea bass season? Could you share a little bit more about that tonight, please?
Sure. So the sea bass season in question, really the most important part of it is just that, you know, we want to make sure that there are continuous seasons for sportsmen to pursue the activities that they love, right? So sea bass are actually a kind of what we call a bridge target species, where, you know, between some of the bigger seasons like fluke.
Well,
it's
Cody,
something that,
Cody,
you know, that people
Cody,
can fish for.
Cody, real quick, I hate to cut you off. Just to be clear, because maybe our residents tonight listening on shore, what point of the year is sea bass season? Is it a few months? Is it a certain amount of weeks? What does that entail for our listeners that aren't aware of what sea bass season is and how long it is and why the necessity of wanting to extend? If you could just shed some light on that, please.
Sure. So I think the important part of the sea bass season is that, you know, you have these charter boats and stuff that, you know, that need to be able to get people out on the water and stuff. And, you know, and so the open season for 2017 for black sea bass was May 26th to June 18th, and then July 1 to August 31. And then again, from October 22nd to December 31. So, and that goes from a 10 fish limit to a 2 fish limit to a 5 fish limit. So, you know, basically what we strive for is to have a continuous, fishing season, right? So we don't want any long stretches of time when, you know, anglers are, you know, not allowed to pursue, any target species, during that time, you know, what basically time that people aren't spending fish. What we strongly advocate for is just, you know, an equitable distribution. Sometimes we try to move seasons or advocate for lengthened seasons. I can tell you that that saltwater regulations are some of the most in depth that I've worked on. I've worked with policy at all levels all around the country for my entire career. But you know, you're working with management programs at multiple levels. So you're looking at the New Jersey Marine Fisheries Council, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Council, and then, you know, you're going all the way up to ones that, you know, manage the entire Eastern Seaboard. So, so, you know, there's just a lot of stakeholders involved. A lot of these fish migrate from area to area at different times, depending on, you know, things like water temperature, current weather conditions, et cetera. So, you know, I think that that the most important thing for people to understand is that, you know, there's a it's a moving target. So we try to advocate for whatever we think is best for both the sportsman and the wildlife resource during that year or that season.
All right. Well, I'm really glad you shed light on that, because I think for a lot of our residents tonight, we think that, you know, when we think of a season, we think of months and months and months, and that's not the case, right? I mean, it's sort of a small
window.
Oh, no,
it's a couple weeks at a time, really.
Okay. And again, and that's where people that are, you know, fishermen, fisherwomen, hunters of all types, I mean, these are small windows that they have at their disposal, right? So it's not like a long amount of time, and they have to sort of maximize it, don't they, when it becomes available?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's technically two bear seasons every year in New Jersey. Each one of those is 6 days. So, you know, I mean, we're not spending 6 months in the woods tracking bears and shooting them, you know. We're spending 6 days once or twice a year pursuing bears before they bed down for hibernation. You know, same thing for, I mean, all along the Delaware, any of the towns that you see on the Delaware, most of them were built back when shad was a huge commercial fishing resource that, you know, that's why we have the Shad Fest in Lambertville. They were a really important food source. People don't really eat them nowadays because they're super bony, but it's really fascinating once you start to dig into the history here of seasons and how responsible management practices have kind of come on because anadromous fish that, you know, that migrate up freshwater areas, you know, actually were decimated by like things like building of dams and stuff that cut off critical breeding grounds for them. And that's what really affected a shad population that at one point was like in the millions. And now we see about 300,000 swim up the Delaware every year for the run.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that's, you know what, listen, it's good to learn something new every day. I did not know how expensive
this was.
And it's incredible. And again, you're a wealth of information on this, Cody. Again, I looked at the website and I looked at, again, you know, one of the petitions on here certainly was addressed to one of our U.S. senators. What's been your experience we've already sort of talked about the experience you have with engaging members of the legislature in Trenton. What's been your experience in dealing with federal legislators, you know, whether it's been Senator Bob Menendez, Senator Cory Booker, or the plethora of different congressmen or congresswomen in New Jersey when it pertains to, you know, really bringing these issues to light about the importance of a sound ecosystem, about looking at some of these management tools when it comes to hunts and traps and everything else? What's been your experience with them in the sense of, have they been receptive, or have they been able to be remotely helpful in this process, or does it remain a state issue?
So a couple things. Number one, anytime that you sit down with a legislator and present them with the facts around an issue, they're going to listen to you. And that's the number one advice that I can give to anybody that's listening right now. You just gotta educate somebody who doesn't really know as much as you do about an issue and make them understand why this issue is so important, number one, to their constituents, number two, to you. And that's exactly what we do. So we do that at all levels. We don't normally do a whole lot of stuff with federal legislators, just because wildlife management is such a state issue. The model is such that basically the taxes, they're called Pittman-Robertson taxes that get collected for hunting and fishing fees or license fees, and then there's also a 1.5% tax on every gun, piece of ammunition, fishing tackle, trap, or other hunting item that's sold actually gets put into a fund and then reallocated back to the states by the federal government. But that's really the extent pretty much of what the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service has to do with hunting other than migratory water or other Migratory Bird Species Act protecting animals. So we work with federal legislators whenever there's an issue that comes up with regard to that, like the fluke issue. We had a huge issue last year where they were trying to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Council was trying to stop increase the bag limit size for our fluke season by an inch, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it actually just means that nobody on the recreational side would have been able to keep any fish with no consequences for deep pocketed corporate interests. So what we did was we worked with federal legislators. We worked with the lieutenant governor at the time, Kim Guadagno, who was a fantastic advocate for wildlife. We loved her very much. We loved the Christie administration too because of that. And we worked with them to educate the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Council and the secretary there to come around and drop the 1-inch increase issue with us. So, that's just one way that we fought for both sportsmen and kind of sound resource management. And, that's why that's the only way really though we advocate with federal legislators. There's not a whole lot that goes on at a federal level because most of the wildlife management decisions happen at the state level.
Cody, you were breaking up a little bit. I don't know if you're hitting bad reception where you're at right now. You were kind of a little bit in and out. I don't know if you.
Sorry. No, I just said that the only issues we really work with are really state level issues because that's where all the decisions are made.
Okay, fair enough. I just want to pick your brain here a little bit, folks. If you're just joining us here live, it's 9:15 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. Again, I want to thank Mr. Cody McLaughlin, a trustee from the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance, for being here on the program. Cody, just a few more minutes of your time. I know you've had a long day, and you've been a gentleman being on with me for over an hour, so I appreciate that. Just want to pick your brain here for a moment because you're a New Jerseyan, I'm a New Jerseyan, and conflicting reports about what's coming out of the governor's mansion, what's coming out of the Golden Dome in Trenton with the legislature. As a taxpayer in New Jersey, how concerned are you pretty much as it pertains to the budget, sort of like not being on the same page as we see right now between the governor's office and the legislature, and whether or not a state shutdown happens again, it remains to be seen. But with 9 days to go, it seems like they're sort of trying to, they're waiting for the last minute. They're trying to like rush this through. Both sides aren't on the same page. As a taxpayer, how concerned are you about sort of like the issues concerning the budget? And, I don't want to put you on the spot and ask, who's right on this, but quite frankly, how concerned are you as a taxpayer about what the legislators in Trenton are advocating for, what the governor is advocating for on this budget?
So, look, as a taxpayer in New Jersey, I'm sure I don't have to educate your listeners that we pay the highest property taxes in the country. I got to say that I'm deeply concerned anytime somebody starts talking about hiking over $1 billion worth of taxes on, the most pressed people in the country. I think that's important to note. But, Steve Sweeney is both a friend of wildlife and from everything that I've read has been a friend to taxpayers in the state on this issue. And, I think that it's important to note that Steve Sweeney's a man of his word and tends to keep that. So I think that I would just urge all the parties in Trenton to just come together, avoid the embarrassment and start talking through the issues that they need to do to pass their budget, because that's really all any of the taxpayers want. We just want public servants who are going to who are going to swing down to Trenton. They're going to do their job, and then they're going to come home to their district and talk to constituents. You know, I think that that's really their recipe for good governance, and that's, you know, pretty much all I have to say on that subject.
Cody, that's a nice answer. It's a very nicely worded answer. Being an academic, I've learned how to analyze things very well. Correct me if I'm wrong. It seems as if perhaps you feel that maybe the legislature, specifically State Senate President Sweeney, is right about what's going on with the budget, and if the governor maybe, I don't want to say is wrong, but if someone needs to win this fight, it should be the legislature, specifically Steve Sweeney. Is that what I'm getting from that answer? Or
so the only thing, I haven't followed this issue to a T. I mean, as you can imagine, there are plenty of wildlife issues for me to pay a lot closer attention
sure.
to. But from everything read, I would have to say that, you know, that I am in whoever's corner is gonna pass the lowest taxes at the end of the day. on the middle class people like me who just need to get up and go to work in the morning.
You know what? That's a great answer. I'm with you on that. I just, you know, as a homeowner and taxpayer myself, I want to know that my tax dollars are being spent responsibly, and I'm with you on that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Cody, it's 9:20 here, and we're about to wrap up in a little bit. First of all, I want to thank you for being a gentleman and coming on tonight. I know you've had a long day at work to come on here for an hour and really dissect all of the worthwhile things that the NJOA is doing. Again, I'm immensely grateful to you for taking the time to do that. And what I do every week on the show, Cody, and it's something I take a lot of pride in, is, you know, having a conversation with my guests, you know, having a civil discourse where we can be educational, where we can be informative for the audience and really help the audience learn about new topics and ideas. And, you know, for an hour, I've pretty much been grilling you. Now it's your turn. Now the floor is yours. If you got something you want to ask me, fire away, my man. It's, you know, hey, you know, the floor is yours. So what do you have for me tonight?
Well, I think, you know, you've touched on the budget issue. So I really would like to know where you stand on kind of where, you know, this has been a very interesting fight to watch. So, you know, I mean, are you in the corner with Speaker Coughlin and Senate President Sweeney, or are you still pulling for Governor Murphy?
Well, that's a very good question. And at the start of the show, I did my opening monologue, and I talked about sort of the concerns I have about taxes. And, you know, the word tax, Cody, is a very ugly word. I believe it's a very polarizing word for New Jerseyans. Anytime we hear that word, it just makes us cringe. And, you know, one of the things that, and you alluded to before about, you know, having the highest property taxes in the country, and really, you know, it's sort of, you know, spending in Trenton continues to increase, and it's slowly but surely New Jerseyans are being priced out of the state. And, you know, something that I think that I alluded to during my monologue, and I think it's important to sort of to explain again, and sort of, I mean, I don't want to beat a drum on it, but, you know, the idea that the legislature has anything to do with property taxes is just false. I mean, the legislature does not levy property taxes. I mean, for example, those are handled by municipalities, right? So
that's true.
Which derive much of their own budgets from taxing homeowners within the borders of their municipalities. So,
sure.
You know, one of the things that I applaud the state Senate president on is the fact that there's a very legitimate fear that, you know, that the nature of that relationship is going to just escape the minds of voters, because all they're going to keep hearing is, oh, the sales tax is going to go up because we need to raise revenue. Well, guess what? The governor is very adamant about taxing ride-sharing services. You know, and I said this at the beginning of the show, Cody. I mean, it's the summer. And as I tell everyone every week, please, you know, it's the summer. It's warm. You want to be outside. You want to go to the shore. You want to go to the park, whatever. You want to party responsibly. By that, don't get behind the wheel. So guess what? Ride-sharing services are monumentally important. And what do you want to do? You want to tax them and create even more of a burden for people. You know, you want to tax, you know, home-sharing services such as Airbnb. You're looking at maybe looking at an increase at the gas tax again. And at some point, I just sit there and say, wait a minute. Like, is there any restraint here? Is there any sort of – does anyone just press the pause button and just say, hold on a second here? we just want to tax. And I've had legislators on the show. I had State Senator Weinberg on a few weeks ago. I had State Senator Rice from Essex County. I had Assemblyman Carroll from Morris County. And, you know, listen, I have graduate degrees, Cody, but one graduate degree I do not have is an MBA. But you don't need an MBA to understand that you can't tax your way to prosperity. You can't tax your way.
Absolutely not.
You can't. And to me, it's just mind-boggling where the idea of, hey, you know, just tax, and spend, and somehow that's going to bring us into some sort of fiscal, you know, normalcy. It doesn't happen that way. And to me, you know, I'm glad that Senator Sweeney is kind of putting the brakes on here, because it's kind of, you know, he's
well,
kind of giving the governor
to.
A moment. Exactly, because he's kind of given the governor, you know, a moment of pause here where, you know, again, I met Phil Murphy on a few occasions. He's been a nice man to me. I'm hoping to get him on the show at least some point during the summer. We'll see. But the bottom line is that, you know, one thing is campaigning all these things last summer, and now it's governing. So, you know, when you campaign is one thing. When you have to start governing and making those tough decisions, that's a whole different story. I think that that's sort of been a rude awakening in Trenton right now, where, you know, the idea that, well, because a letter is next to your name and your letter is the same as my letter, we're going to see eye to eye in everything, and we're just going to move forward together. Listen, Cody, as we know, and I talked about this on the show, not every Democrat is cut out of the same cloth. Not every Republican is cut out of the same cloth. So the idea that, oh, well, the legislature's been dominated by the Democratic Party for well over 25 years, and now we have a Democratic governor, okay, well, everyone's going to be on the same page. That's not true. That's not true. And I think that, and I said this at the beginning of the show, it's just mind-boggling to me. It's 9 days out, and it just seems like every year this drama unfolds in the news cycle. You see it in the newspapers, online media, with Insider NJ, for example, everywhere else, where they're waiting for the midnight hour. Like, you know, this should have gotten done right after Memorial Day. You know, go have your barbecues with your kids, go out, you know, to the shore, go to the bar, wherever, and then right after Memorial Day, like, buckle down and just get this done. And it's just mind-boggling to me that it's pretty much 9 days and 10 hours and counting, and we're still in this drama. And I again, you know, as I said to my listeners tonight, I don't want to sound pessimistic, but if you have plans to go to the shore on July 1st, have a backup plan, you know? go play mini golf or something, or go to a Yankee game or something, please, you know, or do something else. You know, go to a Yankee game.
Well, I mean,
that
strongly affects sportsmen too, which upsets us because, you know, a lot of the we have a lot of access issues, especially, you know, guys want to go fishing with their families or their kids on 4th of July weekend, and, you know, now they're staring down the barrel of a government shutdown because people just can't come together and make a decision, you know, and that's not why we elect leaders.
No, you're right, and it's a concern, and like I said, I mean, it's 9 days out. We're gonna see what happens. We're gonna see who blinks first here. I just think it's a game of political chicken. I think at some point both sides have to sort of compromise because, you know, if for anything else, I think, you know, you want to prove a point about who yields more political power. We'll find out. But Cody, listen, I want to thank you tonight for coming on. You've been a wealth of information this evening for our audience that really maybe is going to be a lot more educated this evening about the importance of a sound ecosystem, and certainly those that are outdoorsmen and outdoors women, and that really, you know, rely on these activities to, again, as you mentioned before, to not just only enhance the sound ecosystem in New Jersey, but really, you know, these are things that contribute to the New Jersey economy, and these are New Jerseyans that, you know, want to go out and enjoy these activities without, you know, the black cloud of ridicule or, you know, really of criticism. And it's important tonight that I think you shed a very, very important perspective about what the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance represents. And before I let you go, if you just want to just share any important links or social media or any important events coming up that the NJOA is sponsoring, sir.
Yeah, so we haven't set a date for it yet, but it will be on our website, njoutdooralliance.org. We're going to be having a sporting clay shoot in South Jersey. That's always a great time. We have a lot of fun with the legislators, bring them down there and you know, teach them a little bit about firearm safety. In addition to that, you can follow us on Twitter at NJOA49. You can follow me on Twitter at MCLAUGH19, McLaugh19. That's a rip on my last name. And then you can look us up on Facebook at NJOA. So, you know, we're out here, we're fighting, we're fighting for sportsmen, we're fighting for sound ecosystems, and we're fighting for safe communities, and we'll continue to do so. And thank you, Fernando, for having me on.
No, Cody, listen, the pleasure's all mine. And again, thank you for the follows and likes on my Instagram and Twitter and Facebook as well. I appreciate you being a gentleman this week and really plugging tonight's appearance on the podcast. And listen, if you could just do us a favor, please continue to plug Politically Direct to all your friends on social media. Tell them that, you know, it's a great show. I'm hoping that you enjoyed your time tonight. And we'll certainly have you back on later on in the summer. We'll certainly have you back on later on in the summer, if not early fall, to sort of get an update about what's been going on in terms of any new legislation or any sort of new advancements as it pertains to issues that really matter to sportsmen and sportswomen in New Jersey. And again, have a great 4th of July weekend. I hope that you're able to enjoy it. Hopefully there's no state shutdown. Hopefully you're able to go and enjoy that with your family, and whether it's going down the shore or hunting or anything else. Have a good one. Thank you for your time tonight. And again, please tell everybody you know about how much you love Politically Direct. Cody, can you do that?
All right. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a great one. And thanks again for coming on tonight.
All right.
Thank you, Cody.
All right.
All right. Folks here, a great topic tonight here, 9:30 on the East Coast. And a really, folks, one of the more educational episodes tonight with Mr. Cody McLaughlin from the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. You can definitely check their website out. Very, very informative, to say the very least. www.njoutdooralliance.org. You can check them out there. Again, make sure you like them on Facebook. Follow them on Instagram. As you just mentioned right now, again, their Instagram page is instagram.com/New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. That's all one word. You can also follow them on Twitter, as you mentioned, @NJOA49. Really, folks, it's, you know, it was a really great program tonight. I'm glad he was able to come on here this evening and give us, I think, a really good and thorough perspective about, you know, the issues that affect sportsmen in New Jersey and the men and women and even children that enjoy the outdoors here in the Garden State. As I mentioned to you at the start of the program, obviously, you know, living where I live in Hudson County is very urban. And, you know, to his credit, yeah, maybe there is a lot of wildlife I don't see at night, for example, being that I live here. But I know at least up here where I live, there's plenty of raccoons and possums, and we see them a lot by the county parks and in some of the rural areas. But we know that throughout New Jersey, there are very rural areas, very suburban areas, and there are residents that are dealing with the issues that the NJOA is trying to bring awareness about, whether it's the sort of the bear breeding that has really enhanced itself in recent decades, also the presence of deer, also obviously the reproductive rates of foxes in New Jersey. So folks, you know, again, it's great to have guests like this. And you know, one of the things that I was looking forward to tonight was the fact that, you know, I like to mix it up a little bit. I know that the show is called Politically Direct, and it's predicated on getting elected officials on and other sort of, you know, political operatives or activists on here. But it's great to have sort of different activists and different nonprofit organizations to those individuals that represent those organizations to come on the show and really to shed light on this. And so I really enjoyed tonight, and it's something I think that for those New Jerseyans tuning in this evening that enjoy the idea of hunting and trapping and doing it in an ethical and humane way, because you're looking to make sure that you keep the area, you know, New Jersey clean and hygienic and sanitary, and you don't want to sort of increase the risk of disease and things of that nature. You know, you look at the NJOA, and, you definitely have to applaud them for all the hard work that they put in there. So, you know, good job by them. Again, it was a really good program there tonight. Again, check them out at their website, www.njoutdooralliance.org. All right, folks, I can't say it enough here. If you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, it was a great one with Mr. Cody McLaughlin, again, trustee of the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. You can check out www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectnj from any PC, Mac, smartphone or tablet. If you have a topic or issue when I hear about in the coming weeks, folks, please write to the show's inbox. I love from you. PoliticallyDirectNJ@yahoo.com. Speaking about issues and guests coming up here, folks, we have a real treat for you. Coming up next Thursday night, folks, a little after 8:15 here on the East Coast, we will have Mr. Peter Shenouda, the chairman of the New Jersey College of Republicans, along with the executive director, Ms. Dahlia. We'll join about the political climate in New Jersey. And so we're looking forward to having, again, Chairman Peter Shenouda and Executive Director Dana Almeida from the New Jersey College Republicans on the program next week. Following that, on July 5th, we will have Ms. Megan Warner, the Executive Director of the College Democrats of New Jersey. So back-to-back weeks, we'll have college political organizations on here, folks. And it'll be very interesting, to say the least, as I have a lot to talk about with both organizations, some things I want to take them to task on, some issues I want to discuss with them, and maybe debate. So it'll be great to have them on here in the coming weeks, folks. And that's what I take pride in, ladies and gentlemen, giving you the best guests here every single week on Politically Direct. So if you want to provide any feedback or ideas for future episodes, please write to the show, PoliticallyDirectNJ@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @PoliticallyDirectNJ. You can also follow me directly on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Also, follow me on Twitter. That's greatly appreciated as well, @FernandoUribeJr. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. That's 400-plus likes and counting. We had some great traffic this week, folks, on the page. Well over 1,300-plus people reached this week on the Facebook page alone. So, again, it continues to grow, folks, and it continues to grow because of you, the audience, that love listening each and every week. And do not forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Again, folks, 9 days and counting until the budget has to be signed or there will be another state shutdown here in the Garden State. And again, the premier news organization giving you the scoops each and every day, up to the minute, up to the hour. But what's going on in Trenton? What's going on with the budget? Look no further. You can always rely on Insider NJ. Again, once you go on the main page, click on absolutely free the subscribe button. You'll get the morning intelligence briefing delivered conveniently to your inbox, and you can read it while you're having breakfast, maybe walking your dog, maybe you're sitting on your treadmill on your smartphone or your tablet. Hey, the latest scoops and the most exclusive news you'll find anywhere in New Jersey about the political scene here in the Garden State comes to you every single morning courtesy of Insider NJ. So check them out always, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. And ladies and gentlemen, again, I can't say it enough, that whether it's on your morning commute, you're getting that daily workout in, walking your dog, hopefully staying hydrated during these hot, very hot summer days, doing laundry. For some of my students taking summer session courses, again, if you're going to take a break from doing homework, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget, ladies and gentlemen, that it's real, it's here, it's Politically Direct. Good night, Trenton. Our capital city is still buzzing as perhaps a state shutdown is looming. So do me a favor. Please party responsibly, especially if you're down the Jersey Shore. Please be careful. The cops down there can be an absolute pain, and they can be some of the worst cops you'll ever find in New Jersey. So please be careful. Take an Uber or Lyft if you have to. Remember, don't give any more of your hard-earned money, folks, to some of these municipalities down the Jersey Shore who are just predators with some of their practices when it comes to checkpoints and, you know, monitoring motorists of any kind. So please be careful, and we'll give you some updates on the state budget on the Facebook page as they become available, again, via Insider NJ. So I'll see you here next week, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.